This is the D Word Podcast, where we talk dementia. Welcome along to another D Word Podcast here on UK Health Radio. And I'm delighted this week to welcome back our friend Lance A. Slanton from All Home Care Matters. Now, a lot of people say to me, how do you find time for everything you're involved in? But compared to Lance, I have a comparatively quiet life. Along with everything he's involved with, he's now become an author. Well, Lance, always a pleasure to welcome you as my guest on the D Word.
Yes.
A man of many parts and many things. Home Care Matters. I mean, I'm catching you up. You've done over 300 episodes now, haven't you?
Yeah. With All Home Care Matters, we're at 304 episodes. And then that's not including Conscious Caregiving with LNL that we produce with Lori LeBay, or the Caregiver's Journal that we produce with Cindy and Christina Hardenweiss. So we're busy.
Yeah. Well, you've got a day job as well as all of that, haven't you? So you are very busy.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am, man. Got three young kids. School's getting ready to start here for us, and soccer season's underway, and I coach a couple of their teams. So, you know, I always joke with people when they say, you know, don't you like to have a day off? And truthfully, Pete, I wouldn't know what to do with a day off.
You're a man after my own heart in that one, I think. Now, as well as all of that, you've now become an author. The Home Care Matters official family caregiver's guide. I won't ask you how you found time to write it, but what was the motivation behind producing the guide?
Yeah, thank you for mentioning that, Pete, because as you mentioned, the book, The All Home Care Matters Official Family Caregiver's Guide, is actually something I wrote more for personal reasons than anything else. Many years ago now, my wife and I, we were newlyweds. And we got a phone call one evening, like so many families sometimes often do when these situations happen. And it was a home health care nurse, and she was trying to reach my wife and I, and we had no idea what this could have been about. And I was pursuing medical school. My wife had recently graduated college, and she's well on her way in her career at this point. And my father had suffered a pretty significant fall. And it wasn't dementia, it wasn't Alzheimer's, it wasn't cancer. It was no terminal illness, is what I'm trying to say. And it was a fall that he just really landed on his tailbone with, and it developed into a very significant bruise. Well, when you're sitting at the dinner table, when you're sitting in your recliner, you know, when you're using the restroom, when you're driving your car, we put a lot of pressure on that area of our body daily, and we just kind of take it for granted and don't even give it a thought. Well, that bruise never had a chance to properly heal because of that. And the bruise then, as a result, developed into what they called an abscess. And that abscess ended up bursting on my dad. And he was driving his car one day, and all of a sudden, you know, that big bruise became, think of a giant blister, essentially. And it just popped open and, you know, soaked his seat, and he didn't know what was going on. You know, my dad was a Marine and an engineer for the railroad, didn't really have much of a healthcare background or insight into healthcare much. And he went to his family doctor and he waited in the waiting room. Meanwhile, you know, this abscess is, you know, drenching all over. And he finally got in to see the doctor, and the doctor said, "What are you doing here? You need to go straight to the emergency room right now," which kind of, you know, scared my dad. So he got over there, and hours later, they're doing emergency surgery, and he was discharged to a rehab for a couple of weeks, then back to his home. Well, this is part of the issue. Maybe we'll get into this a little bit later with the healthcare system. They didn't ask him, what kind of support do you have at home? They had no insight into, after he's out of their care, my dad and lived by himself at this point. He's retired. He didn't have anyone living in the home. And finally, thankfully, this home healthcare nurse identified, okay, this man cannot properly take care of this wound where the location is at. None of us could, no matter who we are. And so she said he needed to either come live with my wife and I, what we thought was going to be just a 6-8 week thing, or he was going to have to go into a facility till it properly healed. Well, of course, we said, no, absolutely. You know, he can come live with us. We would have done the same thing now if you asked us again. But at the time, we really didn't know what we were getting into either. And his care ended up being pretty much 24/7 because we had to change the bandages, cleanse the wounds. And I was the one doing that, not my wife. She was helping with like his meals and, you know, things of that nature. And we did that for 2.5 years, Pete. And ultimately he ended up having seven major surgeries on that same area over 2.5 years. And it finally, the infection was never able to be contained. And sadly, it ended up going into what they call osteomyelitis, which is infection of the bone. And they ended up having to shave and cut part of his tailbone out of his body to try to stop the spread of the infection. But at that point, it had reached the bloodstream and it just went throughout the body. And that then required him being in a facility to get IV antibiotics almost continuously. And that ultimately is what caused his passing. And I say all that to say, leading up to what drove me to write this book, I'm pursuing medical school and I'm very inclined healthcare wise, clinical wise. I worked in cardiac critical care at one of our hospitals in the area, took paramedic training. I mean, did all of this stuff. But I never heard the word family caregiver. I never heard the word respite. But I was never told those words or shared those resources either as a student or as an employee or now as what, you know, I would be identified as a family caregiver from the healthcare system that was coming to our home 3 to 5 times a week and never once handed us any support resources or asked us, hey, have you looked into this or have you considered this or this is what's available to help you and your wife alleviate some of the responsibility just to give ourselves a little reprieve. And, you know, so when I sat down and, you know, I write news articles for several different major news sites on caregiving, senior care, healthcare stuff, I wanted to have something that I wish I had so many years ago when I was helping take care of my father that was never given to me. And I don't begrudge anybody or hold or resent anyone or hold any hard feelings. But I often wonder, even to this day, why wouldn't somebody have said to us, hey, have you looked into this? You know, this is available. That's available. They stayed in their silo. They stayed in their lane and dealt with the healthcare issue that presented with my father, but never breached outside of that to look at the support, just like when he was discharged from the facility back to his home as a single man living alone with a wound that you can't physically take care of on your own by yourself. And so I wanted to write this book to myself, essentially, from, you know, 20 years ago. So my hope and wish is whoever looks at the book, whoever reads it, and we've gotten some wonderful feedback and emails from families who have purchased it, they said, man, you know, this is exactly what we need. And we've had some where they said, boy, I really wish I had this sooner. And I'm just now finding it, you know, in midstream of taking care of a spouse or a parent. So it's really to help you navigate from point A to point B all the way to point Z. You know, our dear friend, Lori LeBay, she said, it's like a roadmap. I said, exactly. I might be coming to see you in the UK. I might need a map to get there. And even though I'm halfway there, Pete, that doesn't mean I don't need that map anymore. I need the map until I get to your front door. And that's kind of what this book is. No matter what stage of your caregiving journey you're in, there's information and resources all the way from beginning, middle to end to help support family caregivers because, you know, that's what it should be about, supporting the family caregivers too.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
My guest on the D-Word podcast this week is Lance A. Slanton, and we're talking about his book, The All the Home Care Matters Official Family Caregiver's Guide. Yeah, I think the other thing with it is, interestingly, I mean, it isn't disease specific. You've just mentioned how it came from, but Do you think sometimes that some caregivers as a category, a group of people, are ignored when it comes to things like media and books and whatever, because they do all tend to be disease specific, don't they? You know, if you've got someone, if you're living with someone who's got diabetes, dementia, whatever, here is our guide. But you've actually produced a guide which is, this is applicable to you as a caregiver.
Right. And I could not agree more with you on that. You know, I will say there's always exceptions to that rule. We recently had a lady on an episode, and, you know, she was talking about when her mom had got diagnosed with dementia and it was Lewy body. She said, I didn't know what to do. And I kind of chimed in and kind of sort of answered for her or assumed what she was going to say. And I was dead wrong. I said, it's really unfortunate, isn't it? I said, you get that diagnosis and that's really all you get. And then you're on your way. And she said, oh no, the doctor we had, she gave me resources, phone numbers, pamphlets. And I said to the co-host, Cindy and Christina, I said, guys, you correct me if I'm wrong. I said, but you sound like that's you're really the exception, not the rule. And, you know, everybody agreed, because so often, like with my situation with my father, you know, there's such a one way vision, you know, it's like a tunnel vision. All they're seeing is exactly what's in front of them. They're not thinking next step or the next day even. And you're kind of left really figuring it out on your own. A good friend of ours, Ian Kramer, he said, I didn't come up with the term, even though he's the first person I've ever heard use it. I said, well, I will always credit you, Ian, when I use it. He says, you basically, it's diagnose and adios, right? You get that diagnosis and it's all right, adios, you know, good luck. See you in, you know, 2 weeks, 2 months, 3 months, whatever it may be. And I don't understand. And that's where I was kind of going with our situation with my father. I don't understand why the healthcare community as a whole, and I, like I said, there's always exceptions. I don't understand why they're not more connected to what that patient and that family is going to go through when they get their loved one home. You know, what do you do if they're wandering through the night? What are you going to, you know, what do you do if they keep asking the same questions? You can't get them to eat. They, you know, all these things. The doctors and the healthcare staff, they don't have to solve it and fix it, but they can at least help support it, you know, give you some direction. Because people like you, myself, Lori, and all these other wonderful podcasters and influencers, they shouldn't necessarily have to get their information from us. I mean, we're not medical professionals, right? We're coming from firsthand experiences and things that really had a profound impact on us. And maybe, like in my case, changed my entire career trajectory. We're just trying to make a difference and help support other family caregivers. But we're not the ones that are having that face-to-face with that family either when they're in that, you know, in that doctor's office, right? Or in that hospital room, and they're saying, okay, you know, we believe your mother has dementia, whatever form. Okay, that's great. Now, what do we do next? What can I do? How can we take care of her the best, or he or whoever it may be? You know, point them in some direction, give them some sort of resource, something tangible, so that they don't always have to just jump on the internet or jump on a podcast platform and find something that might be applicable to their situation.
Yeah, I, you know, can't agree with you more with what you say. I mean, certainly here in the UK, we still seem to have this disconnect between medical professionals and what we call social care, which is it's kind of a strange title for me anyway, in terms of why the whole thing is not wrapped up in the whole medical bubble. Right. Why, you know, health professionals and social care. Like you say, it seems a roadmap, really. You know, you get diagnosed. And at the moment, you know, the diagnose adios. Yeah, I kind of like that. And I will credit Ian when I use it. But you've got no idea about your destination. Right. With something like dementia, yeah, I have actually got a destination because it's a terminal illness, sadly. But that route in between, and you've got no idea at all.
You don't. You have no idea. And, you know, I think for me personally, I feel like dementia is the hardest illness diagnosis to treat, as far as treating in the sense of a family caregiver, because you and I might be in a waiting room and You might be helping a parent or a grandparent or a spouse with dementia. I might be helping one with dementia. And we're looking at each other for support and tips and ideas. But your experience could be entirely different than my experience. What worked for you may not work at all for me, where, you know, a lot of other illnesses, things that work for one usually work for all. But, you know, another saying that we often say is when you've seen one person with dementia, you've only seen one person, because it widely affects everybody dramatically differently, or at least it can.
I wonder where we go with this, really, because, you know, another score, my previous existence, I dealt with environmental pollution for quite a time. And I can remember talking to a retired cardiologist at an event in London. And I said to him, you know, when you carry out all your wonderful work as a cardiologist, put people back together again, have you any idea where they're going when they leave your hospital? Could they be going into an area with high air pollution? Could they be going into a damp house? Are they going back to a loving family? And he turned around to me and he said, well, quite frankly, I've got absolutely no idea, because I haven't got any time. I just put people right, and it's almost like a conveyor belt, in the door, put them right, out the door. And he had absolutely no idea where they were going, which kind of shocked me at the time. But now I've learned, you know, as you have, talking to you, talking to Laurie, and talking to people all over the world, that it just seems that this is a worldwide thing.
Yeah, it's very much like a manufacturing plant. You know, you get them in, you have so much time. This is what they can have. This is what they can't have. And, you know, and we'll see you later, and, you know, follow up with your primary care doctor in, you know, the next 7 days or whatever. It's really unfortunate. It's very unfortunate. And I know, you know, speaking of where we're going with it, a good friend of ours just came back from London, Pete. And I don't know if you're familiar with this. I know you're familiar with the black cabs, of course, but their cab driver in the black cab, they struck up a conversation because she works with us here on the show and in our offices. And the topic of dementia came up. And he's like, oh, yeah, you know, here in the UK, they're doing a big study on the black cab drivers, because they're all, a lot of them are older in years, and none of them have ever had dementia. And she said, that's fascinating. He says, yeah, the NHS, right? He said, they're very fascinated by this, because they're looking at what we have to do. We have to know directions. We have to read maps. We're, you know, we're using every asset we have cognitively to get you from point A to point B in the best, safest route. And, you know, they're keeping their minds like an athlete. You know, they're training every day, and they're at peak performance. And so they're doing a big study on what is it about the black cab drivers that is helping them to basically prevent a diagnosis of dementia. And I haven't seen anything else other than her conversation. And I talked to another person recently who's over in the UK, and they said they vaguely think they heard something about it. So I just find that fascinating. You know, that could be a big breakthrough, but it kind of goes to, you know, that social care aspect where, you know, doctors aren't going to diagnose you to do a word search, right? Yeah. But they might say, yeah, keep stimulated, stay engaged. And that helps to keep the brain moving and the blood flow and the circulation. And you're using all these senses, which could help to ward off dementia. I think it'll be interesting to see what comes from it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's something I'll look up after our conversation. And also, I think it's probably an example of, you know, we go down the medical route and look at all the medical things, but actually we've got a social thing there of cab drivers involved in their occupation, that possibly the medical people don't actually look and don't look at those areas. And, you know, I've got a friend, Kevin Quaid, who was on the show a couple of weeks ago, and Kevin has always said, and he makes a joke of it, he says, we've got a quiz show in the UK called The Chase, okay, and Kevin says, every night I sit down and watch The Chase, and he says, it's part of my treatment with Lewy body dementia. He said, my doctors don't believe it, but I think that this really does me good. And as you say, you know, nobody's going to prescribe sit down and watch a quiz show, but maybe there are areas that we should be looking at.
I agree. I know we really support and encourage engagement, stimulation. We, All Home Care Matters recently, last month, we went and spent a day at an adult day program here in the States. And the adult day program is for people with dementia. And part of their social care is, they'll do the Nintendo Wii, that's like active. They'll do bowling with that. Then they'll do, balloon volleyball. They do, puzzles. It's not just sitting there and staring at a television screen. They're engaging all of their motor functions and senses. And the families have told them, they said, we see such an improvement when we pick our mom, dad, spouse up at the end of the day, because it's not like care like we do. It's more of an activity center kind of thing. But they're getting meals, they're getting their medications, help with the bathroom, but it's all that engagement throughout the day. So if they were at home and just sitting there, they're probably not doing most of those things. They're going to be watching the news or watching a movie or a TV program, which doesn't really cause you any stimulation or engagement. And it's just kind of dull. I call it dull entertainment.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
It's always good to hear from you here on The D-Word. We're on all the social medias and, of course, the email at tdwradio@gmail.com. Back to my chat now with Lance A. Slatton. Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, for 2 years, that's what I did at the Mount Alzheimer's Society here, was, and you saw the difference in people. Most definitely with those kind of things. I mean, another area, I know an area you've just got involved in is the power of music, as I call it as well. And you've become an ambassador for Purple Angel and our joint friend, Norms McNamara, which again, that's a great area, but not an area perhaps the medics would look at in terms of any form of treatment.
I agree. We were talking before the show. Norms is, I think everybody loves Norms. He's got such a great disposition, a great attitude. And, but again, when I talk to Norms on the show and even off the show, I go back to what I said to you. I find it almost depressing. And it's, I feel like it's almost shameful. Here you have a man like Norms, no healthcare background, no clinical experience. He unfortunately gets a diagnosis of dementia and he goes into a shop and somebody said something smart to him and he meant it sincerely. I think they thought he was being funny or just being sarcastic. And he said, you wouldn't talk to somebody with cancer like that. But yet here I am with dementia. And then he takes that experience and realizes he's not getting the support. There's not the resources out there. And he takes something just a really grassroots from the bottom with really no money, no financial backings, no big sponsors, no healthcare system or pharmacology system behind them. And now it's in over 65, 70 countries. That's from one man doing one good thing that I dare say maybe millions of people are benefiting from or will benefit from throughout history. Why does it take someone like Norms or someone like Pete or someone like Lance to raise awareness? I mean, the healthcare system should be working together in tandem to providing globally, not just in the US or in the UK, globally to help support these people. I mean, it's a worldwide issue. It's not just your local, neighbor or guy down the street or the guy, that you saw at the grocery store. It affects everybody and it will affect everybody. I mean, the numbers continue to climb of people diagnosed with some form of dementia. And the number continues to climb of the unpaid family caregiver. But yet, where's the support for them? Why are people still having to come to the D Word or to All Home Care Matters or to Purple Angel to get the support and resources and information? That should be starting in their doctor's office with their doctor.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the other issues, I mean, here in the UK, we've got something called social prescribing, which really is yet to take off. And when social prescribing, it was probably a couple of years ago now, was first advocated, part of the British press actually took against it. Because I think doctors were prescribing physical activity for people that had had knee replacements and whatever. And instead of giving them a pill, then, have a cycle or whatever. And I can remember the newspaper headlines, doctors paying for people to go on bike. And I'm thinking, well, this is a great idea. And do you think, I mean, we've got our own media, myself, you, people like Laurie Bivigelli, other people, but the mainstream media still seem to have a real problem getting their heads around a lot of this stuff.
No, I agree. And, I just think about, people like to complain about, social prescribing. Here's a, a prescription so you can go to your local gym because you have a heart issue or you're sedentary or you have obesity or diabetes. That social care isn't just for dementia alone. I mean, think of all the different illnesses and diseases they say is a result of poor diet, lack of exercise, too much sitting. That has economic effects. It will have an effect on the economy of your country, of your community, of your city, and your health insurance rates. You have a healthier society and a more active, healthy living society, the cost of everything else will go down. It's just like your car insurance. I don't know how it works in the UK, but here in the United States, depending on the make and model of your car, the zip code you're in, and your driving record, they take the whole community, and then that's what you're paying on average for your premium. Well, if you lived in a community where there's no accidents, no car theft, everybody's a responsible, good driver, the insurance company's not going to charge you as much. It's the same for me. I look at health insurance the same way. A healthier society, you're not going to have as much of an expense with your health insurance. You're not going to need prescriptions as often. It all kind of works in tandem. And that's why I'm so passionate about helping people living with dementia and their family caregivers, because it's like the to me, and rightly or wrongly, I view it as something that it's not looked at in the same way. When you're a family caregiver, I think they just think, okay, like I did with my dad. I never once, Pete, ever considered myself a family caregiver. The word caregiver never even crossed through my head. I just, it's my dad. He needs help. I'm going to help him. The difference is, if I was working a full-time career job at that point, I wouldn't have been able to, because I'm going to be at work, 9 to 5 or whatever it is. I had my daughter, my oldest was born shortly after my dad had moved in with us about the following year. But if I had my three kids and they're all in school and their activities. But there's millions of caregivers out there who are in that situation. They have a career, they have their full-time job, they have their kids still at home. They're helping, they have to pay bills, mortgages, all these things. How are we supporting these caregivers? And if we can't support them, then their loved one may ultimately have to stay in a facility or go into a facility, which again will drive up the cost of care. It's a very horrible cycle, and we just the more we can do to support these family caregivers, which to me are kind of like the frontline defense for these loved ones living with dementia and other illnesses, we support them. Their loved ones are going to do better. Their loved ones do better. They don't require hospitalization or nursing home stays. It just, like I said, it's a horrible cycle.
Yeah, and I think certainly here in the UK, there's a frontline defence for the NHS because without them, the NHS goes under. It's fairly simple. I mean, we're running out of time. I mean, the big question we've had our election, and that caregiving really did not figure too much in the whole agendas around our election. Is it likely to figure in November when you have yours?
I hope so. Honestly, we're not hearing a lot of talk about it right now. I know President Biden did have proposals and things that trying to get enacted. I don't know if that will continue over either if his vice president, you know, Kamala Harris, if she wins the election, or if Donald Trump wins. But I really wish it was more front and center, regardless of party, regardless of platform, because it's a human issue. It should not be political, no matter what. It needs to be something that we all take to heart and look at and say, you know what? It could be my dad next. It could be my mother next. It could be me next. And we need to support those who are going to be supporting our loved ones. I think that's the bottom line, and it should never be a political issue.
Well, Lance, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for your company on the show. And,
Absolutely.
You know, just keep on doing what you're doing. You're doing an unbelievable job. And latest thing was the book. You know, the All Home Care Matters Official Family Caregiver's Guide, which we're very successful with it.
Thank you so much, Pete. And it's always good to see you, my friend. Anytime we can help you guys at the D Word, you let us know.
Always great to catch up with Lance. His new book, The All the Home Care Matters Official Family Caregiver's Guide, is available from all major booksellers, and you can find all the details at allthehomecarematters.com. Well, that's all we got time for on this edition. Hope you enjoyed it, and you'll join me again soon for some more dementia talk right here on the D Word.